Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the MJH Experience with co-host Dolly Miller Brennan.
Produced by CommunicationCreations.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It is me, the notorious MJH, and tonight's podcast we have our co-host, the Dolly Miller Brennan, and our guest, the Reverend Rife of the St. John's Lutheran Congregation in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And as part of his cultural theology series, tonight he's going to be talking about research in artificial life and how it's how they're removing God from the theological equation. And I'm about to play that podcast now. You might notice my absence during the recording because I actually I was traveling back here to Virginia Beach from Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, and I was going down Highway 58, so I just called in for a couple of minutes to get the show started, and then I hung up because that road is dark and curvy, and even though it was rush hour, I was the only one on the road, and, you know, I'm like, I'm not trying to do a podcast while I'm doing 70 miles an hour down a dark-ass road now. So I have no idea how this what they're talking about, so it's going to be new to all of us. Okay, here we go, everybody. This is Dolly Miller Brennan and the Reverend James Rife.
Cultural Theology with the Reverend James Rife of the St. John's Lutheran Congregation in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
There it is. Good. I must have done it wrong.
Yeah, you got it. There you go.
Okay, well, we have Reverend Rife with us tonight, and we have a wonderful topic here tonight regarding the government is now sponsoring research into artificial life forms. And we were discussing cultural theology, how that kind of takes God out of the theological equation here to start in with artificial life forms and to get the Reverend's opinion. So, Reverend Rife, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. And we're talking about, starting artificial, that we're now researching into artificial life.
Well, of course. This has vast ramifications for theology, and it has, I think, vast ramifications for us as a nation and for the world. If we start playing God and we start trying to create creatures, then we put ourselves in the position of being godlike. That is an extremely arrogant place to be. The danger, of course, is that as we learn to do some of these things, as we learn to create creatures that are, for example, half human and half animal, we will be setting in motion a whole new understanding of personhood and a whole new understanding of what it means to be alive. And this will set in motion a whole new understanding or a whole new questioning process of what does it mean to be a human being? What does it mean to be a responsible biologist? And today, if in fact it is true that we are starting to clone creatures that are something less than human or maybe something more than human, the danger here is that we'll be creating some kind of monsters, monsters that could bode ill for our society, for the entire world.
Well, in this artificial life, they're starting off with just a few life forms, and I understand that, and I'm trying to pull this up right now, and I understand what they're doing. However, that does seem to take God out of the equation and seems to place into motion giving government that position.
Well,
and the government for everything, to create life. The government to create life, then does the government not have the right to end life?
Well, of course. And by the way, when we say it takes God out of the equation, of course it really doesn't. Because the molecules of the universe, everything that we have in the universe comes from God. So human beings are merely rearranging what is already here. But if we start creating creatures that are half human, half animal, for example, what we will be doing is creating unprecedented different kinds of creatures. So God, although our scientists and others will want to take God out of the equation, he's really not out of the equation, because any time you're working with anything that is there, it was created by God in the first place.
That's
and they're
true,
simply rearranging it. But
when we
now
look
having
at the public's viewing of this, and we see that the public then looked at the government with the ability to create life, and we see that the concept of God may be completely gone from our consciousness, creating serious problems. Could that happen?
Oh, absolutely. And that will be, that is one of the collateral dangers of something like this. You see, everything has collateral possibilities to it. It will make some people so arrogant that they will say, we don't need God. There is no such thing as God. And
well,
if there were,
May,
we've superseded him.
In May of this year, they created a new artificial organism by inserting laboratory-made genes into an existing bacterial cell.
Yes.
And is it ethical to create new life forms? You know, what are the religious concerns? And Arthur Kaplan asked, the director of the University of Pennsylvania Center for Bioethics asked it. You know, as a scientist, you know, they're busy creating similar life forms.
They're busy creating cinder life forms?
Similar life forms.
Of course, of course. And yes, I think we're talking about something that is extremely unethical, because we are now playing God again. You see, you can do the same thing on a lower scale by simply saying, we don't like Jews, and we can kill all the Jews like Nazi Germany did. Because they're not acceptable to us. Or we could say in this new form of life that's being created, if we can create some new kind of creature, we can say, well, human beings are not up to the same quality as these horse people or whatever, or these lion people or whatever we're creating. And because we will have that kind of super intelligence and ability, we can simply wipe out human beings. We will have no further need for them. And as we create Borgs, meaning humans that are part machine, the machines themselves will begin to take over. If you remember the movie 2001, the computer on board the spaceship, HAL was his name, HAL blamed the problems that they were having on board the spaceship to human error. He said it wasn't computer error, it was human error. He said all errors ultimately are human errors. And then HAL tried to kill the living humans that were on the spaceship. And that is exactly what will be happening. And that is exactly what I see coming in the future if we keep doing this. Because, you see, ethics, morals, are something that are standard. They don't change. But that also means that because they don't change, then they don't always fit in with the newest crazy ideas that are going on in a society or in a subculture like science.
Well, I know what this is. This is just, I know this is just a bacterial cell, and they're scooping, they're also scooping genetic material out of other cells and replacing it with some artificial cells. However, even though it's a simple cell, I mean, this has vast implications. And when we talk about cultural theology, our culture seems to be revolving around government control of all life.
That's right. There you go. And if you say it's only bacterial cells they're talking about, you have to remember that some scientists at Oxford and at Newcastle have asked for permission to clone dogs that would have human hands and feet.
Yes.
So you see, there's a lot more going on than we're being told.
Well, what they have, the researchers, they've constructed what they call a bacterium's genetic software and transplanting it into a host cell. So now we're calling it genetic software.
That's right, genetic
and
software.
And so the resulting microbe then looks and behaves like the species dictated by the synthetic DNA. So we can see a government perhaps dictating, even if they just took one, I don't know how that's going to work, But they're just taking simple cells and they're scooping the genetics out of them and replacing it with a synthetic DNA.
Yes. And what ethically is the difference between that and saying that we don't want any children born in our country except blonde, blue-eyed children that are going to be 6 feet tall?
Well, now Hitler tried to do that.
That's exactly right. So you see, it's the same ethical problem again, showing up in a different way. And this goes right back to the book of Daniel in Scripture, goes right back to the book of Revelation in Scripture, the book of Enoch, which never made it into the Scriptures, but one of the ancient Jewish books, Scriptures that talked about the end times and the fact that when in the last days humanity will destroy itself with this kind of technology, this kind of power, and I see that beginning to come. And I would never
have
believed this 20 years ago.
Here's what they're saying here, Dr. Bittner and his colleagues. They hope eventually to design and build new bacteria that will perform useful functions. And that's kind of scary to me.
There you go. There you go.
The potential of synthetics or... But he says, you know, they're already collaborating with pharmaceuticals and fuel companies to design and develop chromosomes for bacteria that will produce useful fuels and new vaccines. But Dr. Helen Wallace from GeneWatch UK, she has an organization that monitors development of genetic technologies, and she told BBC News that synthetic bacteria could be dangerous. She says if you release new organisms into the environment, you can do more harm than good. She says you actually are releasing a new kind of pollution. She says you don't know how these organisms are going to behave in the outside environment. So Dr. Wallace accused Dr. Bittner of playing down the potential drawbacks. And she said he isn't God. He's actually being very human, trying to get some money invested in his technology and avoid regulation that would restrict its use. So we're looking at someone that's very greedy here, and we're looking at someone that's all out for the dollar, and then the governments are saying, all right, we'll fund it, and then we'll be able to control it.
Correct.
And
now,
then it allows the government to governing bodies to regulate more closely the scientific field.
So now, what if we had developed, scientists had developed a bacteria that would have eaten up the oil on the ocean, the oil slick down in the Gulf of, you know, a year ago or whatever. That, and after the oil was all eaten, what would happen
what
to
that
bacteria?
Would
it,
you know what Obama's suggestion
would
was?
Then wash,
he wanted
ashore
to go to all the barbers and have them collect all the hair they cut and dump it in there. He said the
there
hair would soak up the oil, and they could pick up the hairballs. And that man's a hairball himself.
Again, the point is that would some of these new biological entities be washed ashore, and would they then begin eating up other things? You see, there are always unintended consequences. The unintended consequences of the A-bomb is that we have radiation. And now another unintended consequence that Julius and Ethel Rosenberg helped us with was the idea of giving that out to other people. So now other nations, irresponsible nations, have A-bombs. That is a very scary scenario. So no matter what you talk about, there is always the unintended consequences for it. And the unintended consequences of producing human beings who are enhanced genetically or Borgs or anything like this is unimaginable and would be truly could be truly horrific. Yes, some of these scientists may in fact be producing certain kinds of entities, certain kinds of agents that would be good for humanity in the short run, maybe to help alleviate cancer or to help strengthen bones of people who have brittle bones or bones that break easy and so forth. But what are the secondary consequences of those things?
That's just chemotherapy. See? Destroys your immune system. It may kill cancer.
Exactly. Chemotherapy destroys the immune system. That is right. And it just seems to me that we cannot allow something so monstrous to be done as the creation of biologically enhanced human beings. If we do that...
Do you see this as a product of a new cultural theology developing?
Say again?
Part of the process of developing one? to me it seems like it might be the product of it, because we've gone through this phase where we have entertainment theology, where you just simply have to be entertained, and then you have individual theology, where you have your own ideas about what you want, and it seems to have developed into this concept that it's just for me. I'll do what I want with no consequences, and as I don't believe in a God anymore, and there's nothing out there, I only believe in me, then I can look toward the government to fulfill my needs, and then these powers that be can create life. So is that a product of cultural theology, and is that why cultural theology is so dangerous?
Yes, precisely, because you read into whatever you want. You read your own value systems into everything, so you justify everything you do, of course. And so scientists will say, well, you know, if we have to kill so many cells or kill so many fetuses or whatever to accomplish what it is we're trying to do, well, that's okay. Why not? Because we have a much nobler goal in mind here. I mean, Adolf Hitler could justify the killing of all the people that he did because he was trying to create a Herrenmensch, a super race of people. And so to get rid of all these useless eaters, well, that was an okay deal because we were trying to create this super race. And the same thing is going on here. Although it hasn't reached those drastic proportions, but I think it will if it goes unchecked. And, of course, the value to our military to have Borgs or to have genetically enhanced soldiers is amazing. And if we don't develop it, we can be sure other countries will. And so our military people...
We're seeing religion as something that really holds a society together. It keeps it in check because it has a moral balance. And religion and religious affiliation helps to progress society. You have so many that are saying, well, religion has done nothing but denigrate society, but actually it helps to progress society.
It certainly does. It's the greatest. Christianity was the greatest civilizing influence in the history of the world. There's been
now they're saying that between children, among Americans aged 18 to 29, 1 in 4, says they are not affiliated with any particular religion. To me, that's very scary numbers.
That's frightening, and I'm surprised it's that low. But maybe two of the other three are people who call themselves Christians, or who are members, who claim to be members of some denomination or whatever, but never do anything with it. So they're not true believers either. Because I see a terrible disconnect between the way our country was founded and with what is happening in our country today. You know,
it says that we're on the verge of becoming a minority Protestant country because the numbers of Americans report that they're members of Protestant denominations. Now it stands at only at about 51%. And they said some of this they feel is caused by significant internal diversity and fragmentation, and we've discussed that before with you, the diversity and fragmentation. Again, it's the me concept. Okay, this is what I want, this is how I want the Bible, what the Bible to say, this is how I want the scriptures to apply to me. Therefore, because everyone wants to be what they want to be and have their own individual theology, then it fragments the entire religious community. Is that correct?
Correct. And again, if you have no ultimate authority, then you can do anything you want, not only morally, but socially and in your belief system and everything. If you don't have anything that you hold to be true, then what will happen is exactly what happened in the Old Testament, where we are told that everybody did what they thought was best for them, and society will disintegrate. Now, Christianity in the Western world has been the glue that has held society together and helped it to grow, and helped it to intellectually grow. Now, we're not talking here about the people that tried to hurt Galileo and some of those kinds of things. Those were aberrations. But the Christian tradition throughout Europe and into the New World has been a great source of science, because it believes in the truth of God, that all truth can be known, And it also this technology or this theology also taught people what was right and what was wrong. And when you start to deny that, well then why shouldn't I do anything I want to do? And when everybody starts thinking that way, there will be nothing holding the world together, our nation together.
Well, it says one of the changes in the demographics for religion is actually that of the Catholic Church, that they've experienced the greatest net losses as a result of affiliation change. And they're saying 1 in 3 or 31% in this country were born and raised in Catholic faith. However, fewer than 1 in 4, 24%, still describe themselves as Catholic. And it says the foreign-born Americans outnumber nearly by a 2-to-1 margin Catholics to Protestants, 46% Catholics and 24% Protestants.
Are you saying by that there are more foreign-born Catholics going to church in the Catholic Church today than there are of native?
It appears to be. And, of course, I don't have anything on Judaism here, but right now that's not what we're into anyway.
The whole point is that Christianity and Judaism base their belief system on the same God and on the same moral code. Now, when you do that and you cut that out of your ethical thinking and out of your culture, be it Jewish or Christian, the reaction is going to be the same.
Well, Daniel Greenfield has a blog called Sultan Kanish, and he had a wonderful blog. He's discussed Muhammad and Muhammad's pedophilia and his child brides. And he discussed how that has carried over. Not long ago, they had this huge, huge wedding. I think it was Pakistan, where they had 7 to 9-year-old girls marrying older men.
Yeah. Well, there's no question Muhammad was a false prophet. The poor people that believe in him, we not only have to feel sorry for them and pray for them and try to convert them, but the Western world itself has to wake up to the great danger of Islam, because the people of Islam are trying to make everybody else Islamic, and they go about it in very unethical ways. And so that, if we aren't watching them, they will destroy us. And especially in Europe and in this country where you have so few people that believe anything. Nature abhors a vacuum. And if people aren't going to be Christians in the countries they come from, well, then Islam will step in and plug up the hole.
And now they're looking at religion as being a very competitive marketplace. That constant movement is characterizing the American religious marketplace. And we see that as being a product of cultural theology. So every major religious group is simultaneously gaining and losing adherence. So you have people out trying to grab people into their various religions.
Correct.
So we
Correct.
Have an unaffiliated area of people. It's like a political party. It's a great religious marketplace. But by adopting an individual theology and buying into the culture, this is kind of what's happening here. I know I have a friend in Amsterdam that has said that, I know that some of the prominent Jews in Amsterdam have left, and they fled to Israel because of the raging anti-Semitism there. And I have a friend in Amsterdam that's Jewish and said that, he doesn't like to go into Muslim neighborhoods because there is so much violent graffiti against Jews on the wall. But then the educated Hollanders are now saying they are moderating their anti-Semitism with anti-Zionism. And we're
saying,
I'm not anti-Semitic, I'm anti-Zionist. So we're seeing a raging fire of anti-Semitism growing in this on the entire planet. And I'm wondering if it isn't because, I'm going to speak for myself, I don't know about other Jews, but Judaism doesn't really fit into this cultural theology niche. It is an entire culture. It is a religion. It is a culture. And you don't have individual theologies. And I wonder if, to an extent, I wonder if that's what saves us from becoming part of this larger individual theology and going into cultural theology. And I'm wondering if that's what saves us because of that.
Well, I'm not sure of the answer to that, but I can tell you that there is certainly diversity within Judaism on things that they believe. They believe basically the same thing, just like Catholics and Protestants do, but then there are differences within that. And
yes,
I would say that there are
Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox and Hasids and Reform. And as me, I'm a conservative, you know, that's a
And there are certainly Jews.
And it's just different levels of adherence to law is really what it amounts to.
And there are certainly Jews who have caved to cultural theology.
Well, you have secular Judaism, too.
Yeah. You know, and again, when you lose faith in the truth of your religion, then you will start to wander. The problem with Islam, you see, is these people absolutely will not look at anything else because everybody else is an infidel, and so they hold true to this false prophet, and buy into the fact that this man was a what should we call him, a child abuser and a thief, and I would think also a murderer. You know, that's not what the leader of a church or leader of a religious group ought to be.
Well, Daniel Greenfield had a blog on it.
Yeah, and that's very refreshing. And by the way, as far as Daniel Greenfield is concerned, to make the statement, or I don't know if it was him or if it was somebody who lived in Amsterdam who was afraid to go into Muslim areas of the city.
That's my friend.
That's your friend. All right. Well, you know, he's better. Think how lucky he is that he doesn't work for NPR.
You got that right. Yeah, this is Daniel. I'm bringing it up, Sultan Kanish. Talking about child abuse and rape inside of this. Then I think of a dear, dear friend that is Muslim, and she calls this Muslim extremism. She says that this is not what it's supposed to be. But what he was really discussing was Muhammad and Muhammad's life.
Yes. What are you trying to say about that?
Well, Muhammad and Muhammad's life... he was his Aisha's mother, and her father gave her to Muhammad at age 7, and supposedly their relationship was consummated at age 9.
You're talking about Muhammad, the so-called prophet.
Muhammad the prophet in marrying children,
yes.
And obviously always looking for younger children. You know, it's disturbing.
You do really have to wonder, don't you, why anyone would want to consummate a relationship with a 9-year-old girl. There's got to be something wrong in that person, and that just tells you something else about how wonderful Muhammad was. But we have millions of people that follow him, and they will not be with the Lord in heaven, unfortunately. They will be with Muhammad, and that will not be a pleasant place to be. And so our job has to be to try to convert them, to save them from themselves. But this has to be done with love and gentleness and not bombing and murdering, which is, of course, what those people have been doing all these years.
Well, so what we're seeing here is this cultural theology has already taken a firm hold. Because when we're looking at artificial life forms, I know it's just one bacterial cell scooping out the genetics and implanting a synthetic DNA, but they're calling it genetic software. So that's a scary term, genetic software. So we're seeing that this is the beginning of something. And
yes,
so
of course.
If this is the culmination of cultural theology, what can we do to stop this?
The only thing that I know of that anyone can do is to keep preaching the truth of the scriptures. For Christians, it is to be proclaiming Christ as the God-man, as God who actually came into the world in the form of a human being and promised that anyone who would believe in him and trust in him, he would not only save, but he would save them also from themselves so that they would be saved both in this life and in the future life, and that's all we can do, and it makes the Christian church look very weak. But because Jesus Christ is the truth, this truth that he proclaims has lasted throughout 2,000 years under persecution and all kinds of other terrible things that have happened, because God is using this message, and it does bring people around. And although the Christian, how should I say this, influence has ebbed and flowed, yet people have come to faith in him and has changed whole civilizations. And so this is what we have to do. But Christians have to be forthright and bold in their proclamations. And we have to talk to Muslims as honestly as I'm talking to you on the phone. And that may mean that lots of Christians will get encoffined, you know. And we have to be ready for that because the truth has to be told. These people have to hear that.
What do you mean by being encoffined?
I mean that we have to be used to be placed in coffins because a lot of them are going to get killed. You know, I think, you know, I hear on the news media that there are Americans who are born and raised here who are Muslims who are secretly plotting terrorist acts. And I believe that to be true. So there's going to be a lot of Americans in this country that may get killed because we have been mollycoddling those people all these years. There will probably be, if the Christian church gets serious about its mission and begins sending missionaries into the Near East to try to help those people out from under this weight of Islam, you better believe they're going to get sent back in coffins. And so we have to be ready for that.
We just had, there were two tourist girls in Israel, and one of them, of course, is in the hospital with serious stab wounds, and the other one was murdered. I'm trying to pull this up here. And the other one was murdered, and they're calling it initiation terror cells to initiate them before they can go into a regular terror cell of Hamas, that they need to do this.
And you see, in the meantime, in our press, we are told about how terrible the Israelis are because they have built concrete fences between them and their Muslim neighbors. But then what choice did they have? And we're told about how arrogant the Israelis are and how the Christians have forced their religion on others. But when you look back in history, with the exception of the conquering of Canaan under Moses, but that's 5,000 years ago. But with that exception, the Jews and the Christians have been gentle, kind people trying to bring others to the truth. And that is not true of the Muslims, not true at all. Unless we begin to understand that they are not a peaceful religion, these terrible things that are going on are going to continue to go on. And the only way to cure it is either through evangelizing these people and bringing them to the truth about God so that their young people don't have to go out to blow themselves up to be assured of heaven because, you see, they have no other real assurance. The only other thing that we can do is wage a serious defensive war against them and not the kind of a war that Obama and our country has been waging these years. It would take, and it would mean a real hard, rough war. We'd have to do things that we don't like to do, but they'll have to be done because we must rid the world of that scourge.
Well, so we're seeing then inside of your cultural theology context, we're seeing that the individual theology leads to this and leads us to, there's an old Jewish proverb that says, "He who is merciful to the cruel will in the end be cruel to the merciful."
There
so in other words, you're following the line. You're saying, well, that's okay for that person to do it, so we're not going to say anything about it. That seems to be what's happening. Our individual theology seems to allow us to allow everybody to do exactly whatever they want.
Yes, of course. Yes, of course. And as long as everybody can do exactly what they want, our country will continue to just go downhill. We will continue to be submerged in foolishness, in materialism, and in things
of that
nature.
Well, the one woman that was not murdered in Israel, she saved her life by pretending she was dead until the attackers left the scene after stabbing her in her back and stomach. And she told police that two Arabs had bound her hands, and that after they left, she was in a nearby parking lot where they called for an ambulance to the police. And they're thinking that they were initiation terror cells to go out and just find some tourists and murder them, like a gang, to show that you can do it before you were, you know, accepted into the regular Hamas.
Yeah.
So if you have initiation terror cells all over, and now 45% of Gaza wants to immigrate to the United States, oh, my God, you say, you know, a terror cell coming soon to a city near you, because they feel that most of these Gazians that want to immigrate really do want our terror cells. So it's like it doesn't stop.
I don't understand if they want to immigrate, why they just don't walk in. I mean, our government isn't doing anything to stop anybody. All they have to do is walk across the Mexican border. So if they really want to be here, then they can come. Because we don't care. We're letting everybody in. You know?
Well, it's very sad. And again,
yes, it really is.
And, I'm
and again,
not
it, has to do, it has to do with a president who doesn't know what he's doing.
And we do have egregious errors, I know, in different religions throughout the centuries, throughout eons of time. And that is true. You're always going to have that. But we're saying the general focus of these religions have been to monitor society, to create a moral base. And then you're always going to have individuals that are immoral. But if you create a moral base, then you've got punishment for those individuals who are immoral, because you're always going to have that strata of society. But if you allow that strata of society to grow and say there are no morals, then without religion, you have nothing to hold it in place. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right. That is absolutely correct. And the result, for example, the result of the pill is that we've had much more feminine promiscuity than we ever had in the past. We've always had males who were promiscuous, but we've never had female promiscuity the way we do today. And the result of the sexual ethic, the new sexual ethic, the sexual freedom that has come about, the result is that of that has been a much higher rate of divorce. And the result of that has been a much higher illegitimacy rate, so that now about 49-48%, something like that, I read recently, of the children in our country of any race, of any cultural background, are born illegitimately.
Well, what we're saying is, and what that does is, in some senses, what that can do is take away a two-parent home, and we seem to have disturbed the two-parent home where the mother and father are both working together and saying, well, one parent can do it. One parent really has difficulties doing it all. You do find one-parent families where that one parent is tremendous, but that's not the average. So in the individual theology, living in the cultural theology, it destroys our family unit.
Yes.
You know, so we're saying that, so if we destroy the family unit, and then we take away that belief in God outside of yourself, and say, then we create a dependent society and say, well, the government's going to give us this, the government's going to give us that. Then when the government starts developing genetic software, we say, well, that's okay.
Yes.
So
well, we say everything the government is doing is okay as long as we are dependent upon the government.
And I think what people need to realize is, your congressmen and your senators, they are servants of the people. It's not the other way around. They are servants of the people.
Yes,
and it seems to be now the other way around, that you're there to serve their own political interests, and they are servants of the people.
Precisely. Precisely.
And, so you're seeing that this artificial life, then, is a product of cultural theology, and that we need to become more involved in our lives outside of just pleasure, because I think people mistake pleasure for happiness. And there are two different distinct concepts here. Pleasure and happiness may go together, but it's not the same thing. So if we mistake pleasure for happiness, anything that gives us pleasure we want to do, and therefore we develop our own theology, and then that translates into this large culture that has a cultural theology that kind of erases God out of the equation and then takes us into a government-sponsored life form.
There you go. There you go. And we can rationalize anything we do as long as we don't have a good, solid religious base to begin with. If I don't really believe the Bible is God's word, then I can make anything okay because I don't have any ultimate value system. I can commit any kind of a sin, I can commit any kind of a crime, and the only thing that will maybe stop me is that I might get caught. But I will have no inner value to keep me from doing it.
That's a very good concept. The only thing that's stopping you is getting caught. So in other words, it's okay to do it as long as no one catches me, as long as I'm not punished for it. So as a minister, how do you see your role in trying to ward off a cultural theology epidemic?
My role is to keep preaching the truth of God as found in the Scriptures, and to demonstrate in that in my own life and to bring it out to other people. And that's all I can do. And I can do it in various ways, by being in, by through sermons on Sunday morning, by talking to you as I am doing tonight, by going out and talking to people in private settings, you know, wherever I happen to be with them, whether that is a restaurant or whether it's on the beach or whatever. I have to be continually witnessing to the truth of in Jesus Christ. But that doesn't mean that everybody's going to listen.
So you see your role as not just in church on Sunday morning, but you see your role as being part of the larger equation wherever you're at. It's like a policeman. You see yourself as always being on duty.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, oftentimes I don't like to wear a collar when I'm out in public and I'm not doing anything, because somebody will always come up to me and want to start talking about religion, and there are times when I don't want to do that. I've got other things on my mind. But what I have to realize is, no, this gives other people a chance to find out, to talk about religion, and I have to be open to them like that at all times.
I find some
of the best times I have in converting people or bringing people around to a godly way of thinking is when I go to the bar on Monday nights and watch the football games, and there's all kinds of my own parishioners there.
And then
I have to be careful not to overdrink. But it's the best way I know of talking with these people on their level, and they just love it. And then they start coming to church. And that's what has to be done.
In other words, you have to be one of them. I can remember when that Mel Gibson movie was on about Christ, and a group of us were going. I had a friend come up in Bloomington, Illinois, and another couple of friends here, one's the local legislature and his wife, and then where I was working, one of the DOMs was coming with us, and I thought, I invited, so we had Jews, Christians, and everybody inside of that group, and then I invited a friend of mine, a Catholic priest, and left a message, would you like to go see this movie with us? And he stopped by where I was working and said, yes, I'd love to go. I said, well, I would expect that you would have a lot of authors to go with, you know, with different people in your congregation. And what he said is just like what you said. He said, of course I do, but then I go with Father John. He said, if I go with you and your friends, I go with your friend John, and I can say whatever I want. I don't have to interpret the whole movie. So it's like almost like what you're saying when you're in the bar on Monday night watching the ball game and drinking some beer.
Yeah, exactly. And I do have to be careful that I don't do anything stupid in there, and that I don't, you know.
Don't crash that pickup truck on the way home.
That's right. And don't say anything that you will regret, you know.
Watch your mouth.
That's right. But the point is, you're there with people that really do want to talk about godly things when you just give them a chance. And they do want to find
out
about God.
So you see your position as a minister and preaching on Sunday morning and doing the regular things that the church does, engaging in all the meetings and all the, congregational business that you have to do, and going out and visiting the sick, because I know you do that, and giving communion, but you also see your responsibility to help ward off this cultural theology epidemic is going into the places where you find people and talking to them. And so bringing God into their lives wherever they're at is...
That's right. And that's how we will bring Muslims to the truth as well. I don't know where those people hang out, but Christian people, perhaps who are of Mideastern descent, I don't know, are going to have to go and meet them on one-to-one, on the jobs, in things like that, and begin witnessing to them. Otherwise, there is going to be no hope here, and these people are just going to keep breeding and keep killing. And we have to somehow bring them around to the 20th century and to the idea of a God of love rather than a God of hatred.
Or the 21st century.
Say again, I didn't hear what you said.
Or the 21st century.
Yeah, I meant the 21st. That's because I'm getting so old that I think in terms of 20th rather than 21st.
Oh,
century.
I caught that.
Isn't it silly?
We're not sitting in a bar and having a beer, so that's not the effect of that.
Yeah. Yes,
that's
indeed.
That's not the effect of that. Although when I do make brisket, you know, I make my Hanukkah brisket. I also make it for Christmas because my late husband, God bless him, was Catholic. And my daughters celebrate both. And when I make that at Christmas, I steep it in rum and wine, you know. I mean, so that brisket's pretty good stuff.
Well, I have to tell you, every human being has a religion. He doesn't always know that it's a religion, and he might not even...
Very interesting concept. I like this.
And he might not even believe in God, but every human being has a religion. And our job as Americans is to help Americans to have a religion that is positive and worthwhile. And, of course, the job of a Christian is to bring people to Jesus Christ, to save them not only from eternal death and also from a wasted life. And when you have groups like Islam who are so full of hatred, they are not a religion of peace, then Christians and even Americans have to begin working with them to train them, to bring them to something higher. It's kind of like taking people from the Middle Ages and who now all of a sudden got on an airplane and flew to this country. And many of those people in those foreign countries over there live in medieval times compared to what we have. And there's a tremendous culture shock. And now we have to bring them into a modern understanding of God, which they don't have.
Well, Reverend Reich, it has been, as always, a delight to have you on this show. And I'm sure Michael thinks so as well. And we really appreciate your coming in and speaking to us and addressing this artificial life concept, this artificial life form, in scooping out genetics out of the cell and inserting them with artificial DNA, and they call it genetic software. What's scary is, would they be able to do this? Perhaps. I'm sure they could. You know, if you're in a hospital or whatever, you have something done, can they somehow take one cell? I don't know. But it's a thought. And we appreciate your thoughts.
You better believe they
thoughts.
Will. If we can do it, we will do it. You better believe it.
We
all right.
Sir.
Yes, thank you. I'll see you next time we talk. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, everybody, that's our podcast for this evening, and thank you, Dolly and Reverend James Reif. You guys did a great job, and we'll be back next Tuesday evening. We'll actually record these podcasts at 7 p.m. Tuesdays, and if you guys would like to call in and listen live while we do this, you're welcome to, and that number is area code 661-673-8600. And you do need an access code, and that access code is 437-938, followed by the pound sign. And these instructions will be posted at communicationcreations.com. And we'll also be doing a show Thursday night, I believe, with Andrew Castanuela, who's running for Senator of the great state of Texas in 2012. He's running Republican, Reagan style. And Friday night we'll be here with author Larry Ballard, author of the book Modern Slavery and the Fight for Freedom, which is available on Amazon.com and his own website, which is LibertyCrusade.com. And yeah, we'll also be doing the podcast recordings at 7 p.m. That's Eastern time. And we normally do them Monday through Friday. And yeah, you guys are welcome to call in and ask questions and stuff like that, make comments. And we'll see you, let's see, what's tonight? tonight's Tuesday, so we'll see you, we're not doing a show Wednesday that I know of tomorrow. So we'll see you Thursday night at 7, and we'll see you here Friday for our, it's actually going to be our Christmas show. We scheduled a show for Christmas Eve, not realizing it's Christmas Eve. So we decided to go through with it anyway and make it our Christmas show. So join us for that, it'll be fun. All right, everybody, this is MJH. Peace, God bless, and I'm out of here. Everybody have a great night and even greater day tomorrow. Later.
You have been listening to the MJH Experience.
Produced by CommunicationCreations.com.